Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul and Jordana, Dan Cook back at the helm. Welcome back, Dan.
Happy to have you back, Dan.
How is Folker?
Well, it depends on the hour. We thought he was out of the woods this morning.
We told you yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday he had what we think was a TIA, a series of small strokes. And my sister found him in the kitchen. He was actually making lunch, and he looked up at her and said, I think I just had a stroke. Call the hospital. And so the ambulance came, took him to the hospital. He was in the hospital last night for observation. They ran a battery of tests. This morning she walks in, and as she walked in, he couldn't speak. And found out that he had low blood pressure. So we thought, oh, my gosh, maybe he had another stroke this morning. But turns out we think it was low blood pressure.
And the hospital wasn't monitoring his blood pressure? Isn't that kind of what they do?
You would think. He was in the ICU, but they came in every 4 hours, and a nurse would take his blood pressure. We thought he was hooked up to the machines and that they would be able to tell. But so anyway, now he's running additional tests. And we're not sure what's going on. It seems like medical whack-a-mole now.
Is he awake and lucid?
Blood in his urine. And he's awake, and he's irritated, and he's hungry, and he wants to get the heck out of there. But until they find out what's really going on, he's going to spend another night tonight. And thank you to everybody who reached out with kind words of support.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that very much.
All right. People were asking on Facebook and Twitter, and I've certainly been thinking about him. So,
well, when do you get on a plane? What I'm kind of wrestling with, as much as I love being here with you and chatting with our listeners, you know, I don't want to look back, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Mm-hmm.
Do I get on a plane now, knowing what I know? Dad was on the speakerphone with me this morning, and he goes, Douglas, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm going to get home. I'm going to see you next month. Don't worry about me. But part of me is wondering, you know, do I err on the side of caution and just get on a plane?
I get that.
So when you pull that trigger. So I'm wrestling with that. But, all you can do is pray harder, right?
That's right. And we are thinking about him and you, of course. And if you need to get on that plane, you go.
Well, thank you.
You go, but we get it. And that's a hard decision. I think a lot of parents or kids grapple with that when it comes to their ailing parents.
Yeah, nobody told me about this growing up that, hey, you know, watching your parents age and the challenges they go forward and saying goodbye to your parents, one of the hardest things in life for all of us, all of us. So anyway, I'm wrestling with this. I know there was some news out today, some medical news that resonated with you because you lived it.
In fact, that's true. So we'll give you updates on Folker as we get them, of course. But thank you for your kindness and for your interest, of course. The big story that I couldn't get enough of was that the FDA has approved a drug, the first ever drug, for postpartum depression. Now, postpartum is treated like other depressions. They give you serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, and, you know, they're depression medications to kind of lift the malaise of the postpartum because it's a real disorder. But this drug is specifically for women going through postpartum. It's called Zulresso or brexanolone, and it's an injection, and it helps within 24 hours. Because those who have ever been on medication for depression know that it takes a couple weeks to kick in.
And that one may not work,
exactly.
Right? You have to find the medication that's right for your physiology.
And postpartum, I think, is really a misunderstood and underdiagnosed condition. When I gave birth 3 times, I imagined that after my first pregnancy, I had a touch of postpartum. And it does get worse with subsequent pregnancies.
For everyone?
Well, for those who get it. That's the how it's diagnosed, that if you have it, it can get worse with your with every pregnancy.
Wow.
So I was never diagnosed after my first one. And after my second one, I suffered for a year afterward. And finally, my doctor, my family physician, who became a friend, said to me like a year later, she goes, you know, Jor, I think you had postpartum. And we just never treated it. We were treating my ear infections and my sinus infections and my backaches and my lethargy and the malaise. But we never diagnosed it as postpartum because I wasn't feeling sad.
Now, for guys, for dudes that are listening, what are the symptoms of postpartum? Is it sleeplessness? Is it depression, anxiety, all of the above?
It's
is it a physical?
It's different in every woman. And when you say, is it sleeplessness? Is it lethargy? You're talking about a woman who just had a baby.
Yeah. Well, no, I get that.
And postpartum can set in for the first year since you've given birth. So maybe if you don't have it in the first 6 months, you may have it a little bit later. Now, what happens in postpartum? There's a hormone that increases throughout a woman's pregnancy. And after you give birth, your body releases that hormone because you don't need it anymore to grow a baby. And that can cause the depression. Not every woman gets it. So this new drug, it's delivered intravenously. It's a 60-hour infusion. And it gets your hormone levels. It helps regulate your hormone levels. The amazing thing about this new drug, and I promise I'll get back to my story in a minute, is that it can give you relief in 24 hours, which is unbelievable. And you know, when you're caring for a baby, if you're nursing, if you have other kids at home, getting relief from a very dangerous depression is all you want when you're in that moment. So back to my story, after my first one, I wasn't diagnosed. My second one, she said, you know, you probably had it, but I was out of the woods at this point, so they weren't treating it. Well, after the third one, 6 months after I gave birth to my little Ruby, I was a quintessential candidate for it. I couldn't sleep. I could not eat. Paul, I weighed 96 pounds.
Is this when you were working with me?
No.
For the Weather Channel, for Weather Nation?
No.
Okay.
That was different. That was divorce depression.
Oh, okay.
That was a whole different story. And by the way, that'll get you skinny real fast, too.
Oof.
Yeah. So, or maybe the other way. Maybe you eat. But mine was I couldn't eat. Anyway, with postpartum, even though I was nursing and I needed the calories, I could not eat. It was like food would make me sick because I was depressed. I was sick all the time. I had sinus infections and I had strep throat. Like I'd get off one drug, the next day I'd be on another drug. I could not get well physically or emotionally. And finally, I remember the day where I looked at, a babysitter was helping me. I said, can you please call my husband? I cannot physically get out of this bed. It felt, when I was laying in the bed, and it felt like somebody had their foot on my chest. And I could not get up. And I knew that something was wrong with me. And I went to my doctor, and she said, yes, this is what it is. And we can help you. And she put me on serotonin reuptake inhibitors. She put me on drugs. It was Zoloft or Lexapro, or I don't even remember what the drug was.
But it helped.
It helped.
But not right away.
Not right away.
There was that delay of a couple of weeks.
Weeks and weeks. And I remember after the diagnosis, sitting in the pickup line to go get, this is when I was out of work. Again, remember, I had lost my job. My TV show got canceled and whatever. Right. I was out of work. So I remember sitting in the pickup line, going to get my kids from preschool with the infant in the back and just sobbing uncontrollably. And I thought to myself, this is not normal. Why am I sobbing? I am going to get my kids. And I could not stop crying. These are quintessential signs of postpartum. Crying uncontrollably. Yes, of course, feeling sad. I didn't feel sad all the time, but the not eating and the not sleeping. I was angry. I was really angry a lot. So it's if you're not feeling yourself, and my doctor said to me, she said, by the way, Jor, because I was a medical reporter for so many years, and I was so disgusted with myself how I didn't see it. I go, how could I not know? How could I not know I have this? She goes, you never can self-diagnose. She says, even physicians don't self-diagnose.
So, Jura, what advice would you have for guys that are listening?
Look for the signs.
And those signs are?
If your wife stops eating. If she can't sleep, even though I know you have an infant and a newborn. And if the personality changes. If she's just completely different, she doesn't enjoy anything. The crying, the jags of crying, that was certainly one. Look, it presents differently in everybody. But if your wife, I know she's sleep deprived. I know she just had a baby. I know there's lots of pressures. But if you're like, wow, she's really different, And maybe you're angry because you're sleep deprived and you're helping take care of the infant
also. But like, who is this person?
Correct.
This is not the person I married.
Correct. And you know what? I didn't recognize it. My ex-husband didn't recognize it. I'm sure it's what helped lead to my divorce because obviously we grew apart during this time. And I wish I had become more educated about it. I wish I had gotten help sooner. And then I wish I had help sooner because I had to go through a couple drugs to finally get help. This new drug that the FDA just approved, within 24 hours of receiving this drug, you could feel better.
What's the name of it again?
It is called, I hope I'm not going to say it improperly, the brand name is Loresso. The drug name is Brexanolone. Brexanolone or Loresso.
So ask your physician, ask your family doctor if you feel
approved.
Like this is
mm-hmm.
impacting you. Mm-hmm. This is now ready for prime time, and this can help women.
Keep in mind, it may be $20,000 to $35,000 for this drug.
Good grief.
We don't know how much insurance will cover of this drug yet because it's so new. Also, it has to be administered in a facility because it's a 60-hour infusion. So you have to go to a facility and be monitored on the drug. So while it may be a game changer, it's extraordinarily expensive. It's a one-time fee. It's not like a drug you have to be on all the time. It's once. But I only pray that this will be covered by insurance because depression affects everybody. Depression affects the husband. Postpartum affects the husbands. It affects the babies. It affects the entire family unit. This is not just a woman thing. And the husbands, I urge you, if you are seeing this in your wife or had noticed it with the first one and maybe you got another one coming, mm-hmm. Just educate yourselves about it because she can't diagnose on her own.
Oof. Well, thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah. I know you guys have stories about this also. So jump on Facebook, the Paul and Jordana page, or you can reach me on Twitter at JordanaWCCO if you want to share your story. And we'll keep you posted on this new drug.
All right. Thank you, Jor. Mm-hmm. Hey, when we come back, flood warnings are now posted. The National Weather Service has just come out with a new crop of warnings, including the Minnesota River, parts of the Mississippi, including downtown St. Paul. We'll have the very latest on our flood scenario next.
Paul, the rains are coming. Well, the waters are coming.
The waters are arising.
Wow.
Mercifully, I don't see any heavy rain between now and next Thursday,
yes.
Between now and the Twins home opener. Mm-hmm. The models do bring some heavier rain a week from Friday, so next Friday.
Okay.
And some of the models are printing out an inch to an inch and a half of rain. The very end of March, first week of April, we shall see how that affects the flood situation. Mark Seely joins us at 5:10.
Yes, fantastic.
Climate guru, he's been around, he's seen a lot of stuff, and I really hope Mark can help put things into perspective. We know it's going to be a rough year. For Minnesota tributaries and for the Red River specifically, the odds of major flooding in Fargo now up to 90%. And you see what's happened in Nebraska. I have never seen this in my life. 95% of the population of Nebraska has been impacted.
Unbelievable.
By flooding.
The
1,735,000 people, 59,000 square miles of Nebraska underwater. Now, I don't see how that can be because it says it's 76% of the state. That just doesn't strike me as possible. But again, I'm going off
crazy.
The Nebraska Emergency Management. They tweeted this morning. There are now emergencies in effect. Emergency declarations for 74 counties in Nebraska, 83 cities, 4 tribal areas, 95% of the population impacted by the storms. And number of square miles affected, 59. You know, I think it's logical to say, well, if it's happening just to our south, Nebraska and Iowa, how long before that spreads north?
Mm-hmm.
As we thaw out, of course, Omaha, Des Moines, easily 2 to 3 weeks ahead of us in terms of warming. So I want to get some perspective from Mark Seely at 5:10 and hope you tune in for that. In the meantime, the hydrologists, the river forecasters at the Twin Cities Office of the National Weather Service have issued a number of flood warnings, one for the Minnesota River at Montevideo, another for the Chippewa River at Durand, and the forecast flooding changed from moderate to major severity levels for the Mississippi in St. Paul. Now, here are the details on that. the flood warning in effect for the Mississippi at St. Paul starting late Saturday night until further notice. Right now, well, as of 9 o'clock this morning, the stage, the flood stage, the river level in St. Paul was 7.1 feet. Flood stage in St. Paul is 14 feet. Mm-hmm. The river is forecast to reach 17.2 feet. Again, it's at 7 feet now, forecast to reach 17 feet by next Wednesday morning. And right around that level, 17 feet or so, Harriet Island begins to become submerged. So folks that have had issues, problems in the past in St. Paul need to keep an eye on this, as well as the Minnesota River. Flood warnings now in effect, Minnesota River at Mankato, Minnesota River at Morton in Renville County, Minnesota River at New Ulm, Minnesota River at Henderson, Minnesota River near Jordan, and also Savage. Cottonwood River at New Ulm, Cottonwood River above Springfield also under flood warnings. The South Fork of the Crow River below Mayer in Carver County, the Crow River at Rockford under a flood warning. The Mississippi near Hastings, lock dam number 2 affecting Dakota, Washington, and Pierce counties. Also the Redwood River near Redwood Falls under a flood warning, and the Cannon River at Northfield. Keep in mind, the Weather Service river forecasters can look out about 7 to 10 days. Mm-hmm. Their models do the crunching based on all the variables, and they predict river levels for specific towns 7 to 10 days. Beyond that, we don't know, because we don't know how much rain is going to fall. We don't know the specifics of the temperatures beyond 10 days. Mm-hmm. So this is just looking out 7 to 10 days, but already we're seeing some impacts. Can we still avoid a worst-case scenario in Minnesota? Man, I hope so, but I think it pays to be paranoid, and vigilance is called for. If you've had flooding issues in the past, you know, 2011 was a bad year. Of course, 1965 was the granddaddy of floods, but you don't have to go back that far to see serious flooding. All we ask is that you stay alert and keep attuned to CCO. We will keep you posted as these new flood warnings. As we get more specifics, we will pass them on.
A textilizer, so cops can see what you were doing on your phone before they pulled you over. Good idea or not so much? Next.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
A textilizer? Did we coin the textilizer phrase?
We didn't, but it's pretty clever. It's catchy.
Really, really clever.
Just like herpes catchy, but it's catchy, yeah.
It's not happening here. This is happening in Nevada, right?
But it may be happening here before we know it. A number of states other than Nevada are considering this.
Explain it to us. What's going on?
Well, okay. Nevada is considering a law, Jor, that would allow police officers to use a textilizer, new hardware and software, to plug into an individual's phone if that person was possibly using a cell phone during a car crash. If being on the phone, texting, seeing a video, playing Candy Crush, checking your Facebook posts,
looking at porn, because we know you're looking
right,
at
led to distracted driving, which led to an accident. So here's the deal. The device connects to a cell phone, and it scans for user activity, like Twitter, Facebook, Messenger.
Amazon. Were you shopping and driving?
Exactly. But the ACLU argues that police should only be allowed to use a textilizer with a warrant. Otherwise, it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable search and seizure. But here's the deal. The father of a New York boy who lost his life, 19-year-old son, died in a crash where the driver had been texting, and he has become an advocate for this device, this textilizer, which uses it's an Israeli company that has come up with this. So anyway, Ben Lieberman, the father who lost his 19-year-old in a crash, said the following, and this really resonated with me. He said, "When I was growing up, drunk driving was a joke. Now it's not funny." He told this to a Nevada lawmakers earlier this month who were debating legislation. He went on to say, device use is a joke. Make it so it's not funny.
That's right. We need penalties for that, because The consequences can be deadly, and they often are. The question becomes, though, so how does it work? So the cops take your phone and they plug in a device to it, but all of a sudden they have access to all of your data.
Or do they?
You think there are going to be firewalls up where they don't know what you're looking at or what you just bought?
So what you're saying is that they could download everything on your
phone. Or even your medical data.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I log into portals. You know, how did my colonoscopy go? What are the results of my colonoscopy? There is often my banking data. You know, I mean, if anybody banks, and everybody banks online now, if one of your apps is open, you should close them all the time, but if it is open, you know, all of a sudden they could possibly have access to all of that. So while I think it is a great idea to find out, were you on your phone before a crash or before you were speeding, before I pulled you over, I do think there has to be a way to figure out if you were distracted. I don't really know about this way because it seems like they're just all up in your space.
Some of the same arguments, Jor, were used, you know, search and seizure, and I have a right not to incriminate myself when it comes to DUI.
Okay.
Some of the very same arguments were made, you know, many years ago, decades ago, when people said, no, you don't have access. You can't check my breath for alcohol.
But now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've never been pulled over for a DUI, but if you get pulled over and you say, I refuse a breathalyzer, don't they drag your ass down to the station? Is that true, Dan? Is that true? Your dad's a cop. He doesn't know.
You lose your license, right?
I think they drag you down to the station.
You lose your license, from what I understand.
Because Dan doesn't know the answer. That's okay. Because I think that's the consequence. If you don't submit to the breathalyzer, well, that's fine, but you're coming downtown with us. So, and you get your phone call and you get your representation and all of that. I think that is the way it goes. So with this, and they, okay, you can't look at my phone, you're not allowed to do this. Even if they drag you back to the station, how will they ever know if you were on your phone or not? It doesn't have the same consequence. Like, they'll probably be able to find out if you were drunk when they drag you back to the station at some point. No?
Probably yes. But again, you don't have to submit to a breathalyzer, but there are consequences for not submitting to a breathalyzer.
Okay, and well, maybe they never find
out. So
if
you don't hand over your phone,
they don't find out if you're distracted, but then you have to spend the night in jail or you have to go to court, and there have to be other consequences, and stiff enough consequences, like your this guy's father, the dead kid's father, says that it's not a joke. That we're not messing around.
And it's not just Nevada. New York, New Jersey, Tennessee, the city of Chicago, mm-hmm. mulling similar legislation that would make these textilizers the de facto standard for local police. That they could, in fact, again, not just a random, hey, pulling somebody over and we're going to check to see if you were texting while driving. Mm-hmm. It would be at the scene of an accident.
Right.
If there is suspicion.
They plug right into your phone.
Suspicion that a phone may have been involved in an accident. Then they would come looking for your phone to confirm yes or no.
So much of me wants that to happen because I don't want people texting and driving. I drill it into my kids. Never let that happen. If my husband so much as reaches for his phone while he's driving, I'm like, no, and certainly not in front of the kids. Don't touch it. Nope. Voice text if you have to.
They haven't turned on the... Remember we talked about
it. Do not disturb.
In settings, the do not disturb. Best way to avoid that. Best way to avoid being tempted by that incoming text is to turn on the do not disturb. And I know we had Senator Osmick on our air here on CCO talking about hands-free and we need more teeth in our legislation. There need to be consequences. You have the freedom to engage in risky behavior and threaten your own health,
right.
But you do not have a right to threaten other people's health and safety and well-being and even their lives by being on your damn phone when you should be looking out the windshield.
But keep in mind, the people who invented this, it's called Cellebrite. That's the company that invented this. They claim the textilizer does not collect any personal data and only identifies the type of activity on a phone with an associated timestamp. So, but what does that mean? Like, if I was shopping for a rice cooker on Amazon as I smashed into the back of your car, that might have a timestamp when I, you know, clicked on that page. But or does it mean just texting, like a voice? You know, your texts are all voice voice, time-stamped. It also says that the device, the textilizer, will be able to tell whether you're using hands-free mode, whether you're using an app in hands-free mode, because voice texting is still okay. You can voice text or you can use an app. You know, Siri find this or Siri call this person in hands-free mode, which is still legal. But I don't know. It's a matter of if you trust it or not.
And again, this is a case of technology moving faster than our laws, mm-hmm. than our ability to regulate some of these darker instincts that the new technology enables. Mm-hmm. Just because we can do it, should we be doing it? Should mm-hmm. I be watching a movie on Netflix as I'm barreling down 494? I have the freedom to be able to do that, mm-hmm. but I also have to suffer the consequences of that stupid behavior if in fact, I get caught.
Mm-hmm. So I have the answer to your question. In Minnesota, the implied consent law says that if you refuse to take a breath test, if police have probable cause mm-hmm. to issue one,
right.
that's a crime. You're automatically charged with third-degree DUI,
oh.
which is punishable. Let me see. I just had it here, and I've lost it, what the punishment on that is. But it's not,
it's a crime.
It's a crime.
And so that's it.
Punishable by up to 1 year in jail and $3,000. The driver who refuses will also lose their license for a minimum of 1 year if they're
1 year.
You don't get a DUI, but...
Well, you get a third-degree DUI.
It's a third-degree DUI. Yeah. Okay. And a possible jail sentence for mm-hmm. a year and $3,000.
And they take you back to jail then, and I'm assuming administer a blood test at that point. And if you're found, you know, if you're still over the legal limit, now you're going to get the first-degree DUI.
So when they take you to jail, they can do a blood test?
Yes.
Okay, so that's eventually how they find out. Nope.
Well, presuming that you still, again, the time between when they pick you mm-hmm. up and when they have you in jail and when they can administer the test, mm-hmm. if the alcohol processes through your system by the time they get to the blood test, mm-hmm. that such that you're under the legal limit. You know, now they don't have that necessarily that mm-hmm. That evidence to convict you, but of the first degree DWI, but you still have the third because you refused the breathalyzer.
Right.
You are allowed to call a lawyer, but you're. The calling of the lawyer can't delay the test to a point
correct.
Where that alcohol is going to get out of your system.
They won't so the way this is going to happen, because this is going to happen, by the way, there's going to be some kind of a textilizer to see if you were able to, if you were using your phone
right.
before, during, at a crash, something like that. I imagine it will be, because that's how they got around these rights, you know, your rights to not incriminate yourself. So
and this is all based on the fact that driving's a privilege, not a right,
mm-hmm.
right? So that by getting yourself licensed in the state of Minnesota, you are automatically consenting to have a breath test if police mm-hmm. have probable cause to pull you over and administer mm-hmm. one. That's part of it. So then if you refuse it, you're now, you know, pulling back that consent, and that's why they
criminal.
Can make that a crime. Mm-hmm. Same thing can apply to the cell phone.
So, right.
You know, you don't have the right to drive, mm-hmm. you know, so you have to obey certain rules. So you give up certain protections, perhaps, in that case. By consenting to the state law.
Then you have to put on the whiskey plates.
It's going
to
happen.
My wife, Lori, has a strange hobby. She counts the number of whiskey plates she passes on Minnesota's highways. I think she's up to like 86 or 87. I don't know why she counts the number of whiskey plates.
Let's get you out more, Lori.
Well, okay. It is 3:49, Jor, Wicks and Jewelers time, from timeless and classic to rare and exotic. Wicks and Jewelers showcases an impressive collection of the most spectacular gemstones known to man. So, I guess you could say Trout blows the competition out of the water.
Wow. I've been seeing articles this morning that Mike Trout is underpaid or will be underpaid. Now, keep in mind, he just finalized a $432 million 12-year contract, well beyond the current baseball record holder. And we were just talking about Bryce Harper a couple weeks ago, $333 million 13-year contract. So when I saw these articles that he's underpaid, I'm like, whoa, back that train up. And who do you ask about things like this? You ask Dan Cook. And will I go out on a limb and say that you agree?
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree.
That's insanity.
I actually was surprised. I wasn't surprised that the Angels signed him to an extension because that had been talked about post the Machado uh-huh. and Harper contracts. I was surprised the number was as low as it was.
What?
I thought he was going to be pushing $500 million.
Do they have that kind of money?
Their owner signed a contract, a television deal, I don't know, 7-8 years ago for $3 billion. So,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, they have that kind of money.
But again, Dan, past results, no predictor of future results.
True.
And I realize you have to start somewhere, but
well, that's just it.
Why can't they calibrate contracts based on how well you did last year? What did you do for me lately?
Well, I mean, if you do that, the guy's, you know, a Hall of Famer and perhaps one of the top five players in baseball history, so you would pay him like it. You pay him like it.
So what? So define for me why he's underpaid.
Because if you do the math, there's several different ways you can do the math. If you look at, you know, comparative to what Machado and Harper got, mm-hmm. each of those guys were roughly $300 million. Okay. There's a stat called WAR, wins above replacement, that tries to measure a player's overall worth to their team. Trout has been in the league 1 year longer than Harper and Machado, and yet has amassed more WAR than the two of them combined. And by a distance, that 1 year isn't the sole reason why.
Okay.
So he's that much better than two guys that just got paid $300 and $330 million.
He should be making $600.
So he should be if you want to go by that math, he should be making $600 million.
Yeah,
if you want to do it on an average annual value on a year-to-year basis, the statistic is for every point of WAR that you accumulate in a year, you're worth about $10 million.
Oh, boy.
He averages somewhere in the neighborhood of nine per year. Mm-hmm. So you want to go that way, he should be making $90 million.
No, I get that.
This contract's going to pay him $34 million, I think.
It's projecting it 12 years into the future, and I know they're trying to tie him up, and there are no outs in this contract.
There's no opt-outs.
He's going to finish his career in L.A.
He's got a full no-trade clause.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he's not going anywhere. And that's very similar to Harper in the way that he did his contract.
But why would you? I mean, you can stub your toe and not play, and then you get, you know, $430 million. Must be nice. Putting my kid in that baseball clinic this summer. Swing away, boy. Get some of that bridge. Start swinging.
Some of that baseball
money. Oh, my God. We will be back. Talk about Robert Kraft after the news.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.